Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 550, titled Going Native. This is being recorded on April 30th of the year 2006. We're going to plunge right in, and we're going to take a look once again at what appears to be an underground right covert action milieu, which espouses the causes of native peoples around the world. Many of these causes, by the way, are in and of themselves just, and many of these native peoples around the world have indeed been sorely abused. But nonetheless, what we're looking at appears to be an underground right covert action milieu, which is nominally at least headed by none other than Karl von Habsburg, the heir to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the throne of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, a man who's not only a conservative Catholic, but who's married to Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza and is therefore married to one of the primary industrial elements of the underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network, about which I've spoken so often. And indeed, not only the Habsburgs, but their close allies in the House of Liechtenstein are conservative Catholics. And what they're doing hooking up with tantric Buddhists like the Dalai Lama's milieu, or Islamists, or pan-Turkists, and others, well, that is a very, very good question indeed. And let's just say that given their background, given their associations, I don't think they're genuinely interested in the human rights of native peoples. Rather, and I think the evidence argues very strongly, that they are espousing the causes of these groups as a cynical effort to use these groups to break up larger countries into more pliable and usable smaller entities using these native peoples, who will, by the way, be beholden unto their benefactors should their causes succeed. As we're going to look at in the end of this program, among the native peoples that are being espoused by the Habsburgs et al. Are the Lakota, a sorely abused Native American group occupying a nice chunk, or at least what the UNPO identifies as the Lakota Nation, occupies a nice chunk of the central United States. Now, this milieu, this underground right covert action milieu, is receiving the support, or has historically received the support, of elements of, at least nominal elements of U.S. intelligence. These would appear to be rather an underground Reich-associated elements of U.S. intelligence that really correspond very closely to the Fifth Column movements that supported fascism in countries during and prior to and during World War II. The many books that are available on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com will educate you about those Fifth Column elements. The elements of U.S. intelligence, the elements of what are nominally U.S. intelligence that back these activities, are the pro-underground Reich, historically pro-Galen, pro-ABN, and in particular pro-petroleum elements of U.S. intelligence. The same pro-petroleum elements, or the same petroleum-related elements of U.S. intelligence, also have a strong historical intersection with the drug traffic. So in terms of people trying to understand how it could be that we are actively at war with Islamist elements, which one element of the United States is, and yet there are other elements of the United States supporting those Islamist elements, well, looking at the fascist movements of World War II and the Fifth Column movements that supported them against their own citizens, that's one analogy. Also, I think, as I alluded to earlier, there are elements of the U.S. intelligence community that are associated with the narcotics traffic. There are other elements that work against it. This is not to say that the elements that work against the narcotics traffic are cynical, or that they don't work as hard as they can, or that narcotics, certainly like cocaine, heroin, etc., don't represent a serious threat to American society. They do. But there are other elements that are on the other side. So it could be conceptualized as a civil war, really at the bottom of the petroleum slash drug slash underground Reich slash Galen slash ABN faction of U.S. intelligence is money. It may be nominally U.S. intelligence, but it really is out for the big bucks. And one of the complicating elements here is the fact that increasingly U.S. national security matters are being privatized, with private intelligence services and private military outfits, sometimes serving as proxies for national interests, but more often serving as corporate elements working in parallel at best with U.S. interests. Now, before we plunge into the natives, unquote, with whom elements like the Habsburgs are working, reviewing very quickly again the biography of Karl von Habsburg. The eldest son and heir of the dynasty is Karl, who lives in Austria and has served in the Austrian army and was a member of the European Parliament like his father from 1996 to 1999. He has worked hard to keep the family in the public spotlight, even hosting a popular television game show. He works quietly to change the Austrian laws of 1919 that forbid the Habsburgs from holding any political office, and has often been mentioned as a possible chancellor of the Austrian Republic. At this time, he is a general director of the UNPO, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, which, by the way, here is called United Nations and Peoples Organization. Continuing here, in 1993, Karl married Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza, who is well known in European high society. Yeah, and she is part of the Thyssen-Bornemisza family, one of the central elements of the Underground Reich. Now, the UNPO, that's the group, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, headed up by Karl von Habsburg. It includes Islamist elements associated with Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood. It includes pan-Turkist, at least nominally secular elements, associated with Erkin Öztekin, who's a Secretary General of the UNPO and a member of the Board of Directors of the Dalai Lama Foundation. And, like Ruzi Nazarov, whom we looked at in last week's show, Erkin Öztekin is part of the pan-Turkist element in Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, as we looked at last week. What we're going to look at next, we're going to review some segments from For the Record 536, Liechtenstein, oh Liechtenstein. As we looked at in For the Record 536, the evidentiary tributary is running through the tiny principality of Liechtenstein, the tiniest nation in Europe, the only absolute monarchy in Europe, and a country which basically appears to be, for all intents and purposes, a lean, mean money laundering machine. The head of that, now Prince Alois, has succeeded his father, Prince Hans Adam II, but the Liechtenstein is the only absolute monarchy in Europe. Basically, there's a front party, the People's Party, headed up by Norbert Seeger, closely associated with the Alpha Group that we looked at, and among others, For the Record 530 and 536, that acts as a front for the absolute control of this lean, mean money laundering machine by the royal family of Liechtenstein. Now, the royal family of Liechtenstein, the House of Liechtenstein, is very close to the Habsburgs. And, like the Habsburgs, as we're going to review, they have supported not only Islamist elements in parts of the Earth Island that are rich in petroleum, such as Chechnya and elsewhere, they are also supporting, quote, native peoples or indigenous peoples, unquote. And again, the activities of the House of Liechtenstein appear to parallel some of the activities of the House of Habsburgs. And it is in the context of this apparent underground Reich covert action milieu that the Dalai Lama and his associates need to be viewed. Referring now from reviewing, I should say, elements from For the Record 536. In 536, we looked at an interview with Prince Hans Adam II by a guy named Vladislav Cahun, talking about the close association between the House of Habsburg and the House of Liechtenstein. Vladislav Cahun, to what degree does your family feel spiritually akin to the Habsburg dynasty? Do you know that in the Czech and Moravian awareness, you were always considered the house closest to the Habsburg dynasty? Prince Hans Adam II. My grandmother was a sister of the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, who was killed in Sarajevo. This is perhaps the reason why in the Czech and Moravian awareness, the Liechtenstein house is considered the closest to the Habsburg dynasty. Historically, one has to say that the Liechtenstein family became a foreign dynasty with the end of the Holy Roman Empire, and were therefore quite close to the Habsburg dynasty. A number of these foreign dynasties kept properties in the Austro-Hungarian Empire after 1806, as the Liechtensteins did. They were also very often closer related to the Habsburg dynasty through marriage. Just think about Empress Sisi, the wife of Emperor Franz Joseph II. Now, after having noted the close association between the House of Liechtenstein and the Habsburgs, we're going to review again from For the Record program number 536 some of the political associations of Otto von Habsburg, the father of Karl von Habsburg, the head of the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization. By the way, in his bio it's called the United Nations and Peoples Organization. That group is a private group, although its members and obviously head, Karl von Habsburg, go out of their way to try to make it appear to be part of the United Nations. That was part of what led to some of my confusion. Reading now from the book The New Reich, Violent Extremism in Unified Germany and Beyond by Michael Schmidt of Otto von Habsburg. The final escalation was reserved for Otto von Habsburg, a CSU delegate to the European Parliament and son of the last Austrian Empire. Since 1973, he, von Habsburg, has also been president of the ultra-right Pan-Europa Union and a member of the Freedom for Rudolf Hess Committee. By the way, Rudolf Hess was Hitler's deputy who tried to broker a peace settlement in the early 40s between Britain and Germany and was held prisoner. He was the last prisoner at Spandau Prison. And again, note that Karl von Habsburg married Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza in the capital of Croatia. And one of the things we noted in For the Record 536, one of the things that we're going to review now concerns the fascist political associations of many of the ruling families, the traditional crowned heads of Europe. Reviewing now from Kevin Phillips' American Dynasty, it is more than eerie. A disturbing sidebar to the political culture of these restorations was how many of the would-be monarchs, royal houses, and supporting factions that had been on the fascist side in World War II. Italy's House of Savoy was banished in part for backing Mussolini and supporting his 1938 laws and targeting Jews. In Bulgaria, Simeon's House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha fought through much of the war as an ally of Nazi Germany. The Serbian factions backing the potential Alexander II evoked memories of World War II massacres and ethnic battles still commemorated after 600 years. The Romanian House of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, supported by the Iron Guard movement that blended rural Eastern Orthodox religion with folkish nationalism, fought most of World War II on Hitler's side. Again, noting the pro-fascist inclinations of many of the ruling families of Europe, the traditional crowned families of Europe. That, again, is the background against which the Habsburgs and the closely associated House of Liechtenstein need to be associated. Still more from Kevin Phillips' American Dynasty. Unfair as it may be to lump together the houses of Karađorđević, Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, Savoy, and Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, they suggest the dark side of the global political force that has buoyed dynasty and restoration. The analogy to the English-speaking nations is obviously limited, but the caveats cannot be entirely ignored. And now we must turn to the different encouragement given to Aristophilia during the 1980s and 1990s by economic forces. Now note again, as Richard LaBeouvier cited in the passage that we read about the Islamist and pan-Turkist Uyghur separatists, the Islamist elements have become pro-globalist. They are receiving the support of pro-globalist factions because they are not only looking for independence, but many of the areas in which they're active are rich in natural resources, petroleum in particular, and if they become, quote, nominally, unquote, independent, they are readily developable, to coin a term, as puppet states. Now, just as the House of Liechtenstein was very, very close to the House of Habsburg, just as the Habsburgs and Karl von Habsburg have backed the UNPO, which not only backs native peoples, but has backed, along with the Dalai Lama's interests, separatist elements in Xinjiang province, both pan-Turkist and Islamist, so too there is an association between, again, the House of Liechtenstein and not only Islamists and the Bank al-Taqwa, headed up by former German spy Youssef Nada, but also the House of Liechtenstein appears to be backing what nominally at least looks just lovely. Again, the pro-independence and pro-native peoples movements we're going to take a look at what the House of Liechtenstein is backing. It's very, very similar to what we're seeing with the closely associated Habsburgs and the UNPO. Turning once again to some of the material that we looked at in For the Record 536. We're going to review some information about For the Record program. We're going to review some information about the Royal House of Liechtenstein's association with the Bank al-Taqwa, the main financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood. We're going to review a section from an article that we looked at in For the Record 536, Terror Fund Trail Leads to Alpine Kingdom by Mark Perlman from the publication Forward of October 17, 2003. Talking about the prosecution in the BMI case, talking about Al-Qaeda, apparent Al-Qaeda financier Salman Behari. The prosecution also alleged that alleged Al-Qaeda financier Salman Behari is linked to a secretive financial network in Switzerland and Liechtenstein called Al-Taqwa, which American and European investigators say is a financial backer of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood, often depicted as the ideological parent of most radical Islamic groups, recently has come under government scrutiny for its possible direct role in supporting terrorism, most prominently because of Al-Taqwa. A brief review of Bank al-Taqwa's links to the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda is what we're going to do next. The Bush administration and the United Nations have designated the al-Taqwa network and its main officials, two self-avowed Muslim brothers and an admitted Nazi sympathizer, as supporters of Al-Qaeda. As a result, their assets have been frozen and they are the focus of a Swiss investigation. The al-Taqwa officials have repeatedly rejected those charges. At the alleged al-Qaeda financier Salman Behari's detention hearing last month, prosecutor Stephen Ward described Behari as the Muslim Brotherhood's financial toehold in the U.S., unquote. The prosecution said it had established links between alleged al-Qaeda financier Salman Behari and the two principals of al-Taqwa, Youssef Nada and Galeb Himat. According to testimony from Special Agent Kane of the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the addresses of Nada and Himat were found in Behari's laptop computer. Kane told the court that there were, quote, other indications, unquote, of connections between al-Taqwa and Behari's company BMI, including financial transactions. One company in the al-Taqwa galaxy that was designated by the United States and the UN as a terrorist-related entity is a Liechtenstein entity called ASAT Trust. Its director, Martin Vochter, told The Forward this year that ASAT Trust operates merely as a registry for businesses and is not involved in the operation of any company. Translation, it's a shell company. It's a cutout. He added that the American government had wrongfully designated ASAT Trust as terrorist-related because it had once represented al-Taqwa in a small real estate deal in Switzerland. Still, copies of business registration documents on file with authorities in Liechtenstein show that ASAT Trust has been intimately involved with the al-Taqwa network during the last 30 years, registering changes in company names, personnel, and financial structure, which may explain why ASAT Trust landed on the American and UN terrorist lists. The records also shed light on the involvement of one member of the royal family of Liechtenstein in ASAT Trust. According to the documents, deceased Prince Emmanuel von Un zu Liechtenstein became a board member of ASAT Trust in May of 1970 and stayed until November of 1990 when he was replaced by Vochter, the Trust's current director. Florian Krenkel, a spokesman for the royal family, said Prince Emmanuel had died in 1987 and that he was a distant cousin from ruling Prince Hans Adam II. There also appears to be some links between ASAT Trust and a bank owned by the Liechtenstein royal family. Several ASAT Trust documents feature on their letterheads Bank in Liechtenstein AG beneath ASAT Trust. The Royal Family Bank has changed its name and is now called LGT Bank. A telephone and an email query to the bank spokesman, Hans-Martin Uhringer, went unreturned. So again, note that the House of Liechtenstein, like the House of Habsburg, appears to be involved to a certain extent with the promotion of Islamist elements. We're going to review another element, another piece of information that we looked at in For the Record 536, namely a multi-million-dollar endowment to Princeton University from Prince Hans Adam II. And once again, this sounds like a very worthwhile endeavor. It's called the Liechtenstein Institute on Self-Determination, and it's described as a center for research and teaching on issues of self-determination around the world. Well, just like the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, Superfund Superficially, this sounds wonderful, but when one looks at it, one of its primary focal points is to establish self-determination, unquote, in such places as Kosovo, Kashmir, and Chechnya, traditional focal points of Islamist activism. And as we've seen, there are evidentiary tributaries connecting the royal family of Liechtenstein with the Bank al-Taqwa. We should note in passing, too, that the Bank al-Taqwa, the primary financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, also has numerous evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of other fascist elements around the world, elements connected to Italian fascism and Silvio Berlusconi, the P2 Lodge, elements connected to German neo-Nazi elements connected to the old Third Reich, and also in the person of Ali bin Mussalim, who headed up the Bank al-Taqwa's special account that was used to fund al-Taqwa, the right-wing Hunt family of Texas, who themselves are part of an international fascist milieu involving Asian fascists associated with the old Imperial Japanese Empire, as well as German fascists associated with the Third Reich. We looked at that, the Hunt family's international connections in RFA programs 15 and 37, among others. So again, when looking at the Bank of Al-Taqwa, that itself, although the primary financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, is part of an international fascist milieu. Now, once again, back to Prince Hans Adam of Liechtenstein, very close to the House of Habsburg, and Karl von Habsburg heads up the UNPO. And once again, we're going to see them involved in what appears to be the new face of covert action, which is kinder, gentler covert action in the name of democracy, in the name of peace and freedom and self-determination for native peoples, many of them sorely abused in point of fact. What we're really looking at is the cynical manipulation of these native peoples in order to realize the goals of fascism, and in this case also the goals of the absolute monarchs of Europe, for whom, by the way, democracy is just a blip. It's only lasted a few hundred years, and that to them is not a long time. They have allied themselves with fascism around the world because they see fascism as a good way of helping to lay to rest democracy. Eventually, they see themselves as coming back to power. Of Prince Hans Adam and his espousal of what appears to be kinder, gentler, covert action, namely self-determination for native peoples, kind of like Karl von Habsburg in the UNPO, we read, "A $12 million gift to Princeton from Prince Hans Adam II of Liechtenstein will create the Liechtenstein Institute on Self-Determination, which will serve as a center for research and teaching on issues of self-determination around the world. The gift will expand the university's existing Liechtenstein research program on self-determination, which has also been funded by Prince Hans Adam II. It will enable Princeton faculty, students, and outside experts to expand their work and embark on wide-ranging new projects in such places as Kosovo, Kashmir, and Chechnya. As a bridge between academia and the practical world, the Liechtenstein Institute will engage both in fundamental research and in a practical search for solutions to real-world problems." Quoting, "By creating a non-polemical environment for research and discussion, we hope to reduce the tumultuous and frequently violent process inherent in the search for increased autonomy," said Wolfgang Donspeck-Gruber, a lecturer in the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs and the founding director of the new institute. He believes the institute can advance compromises that recognize community autonomy within existing states along with regional integration, preventing secession in all but the most extreme cases. And again, this is very, very interesting indeed. And by the way, the main person involved with the Liechtenstein Institute on Self-Determination is Wolfgang Donspeck-Gruber. It's a nice Anglo-Saxon name for you. More about the project, skipping down. And by the way, all of this text will be included in the description. In the third project, researchers will search for solutions to the problem in Kashmir, where separatist groups have been mounted an 11-year struggle against Indian rule. Predominantly Muslim Kashmir has been the main point of conflict between India and Pakistan since the partition of 1947. At the same time, the Institute will continue to work in assisting in finding a peaceful solution for conflict in the Balkans. an international conference evaluating the implications of self-determination at the beginning of the 21st century, is planned for the coming academic year, Don Speck-Gruber said. The institute is an outgrowth for the Liechtenstein Research Program on Self-Determination, which was created in 1994 and supported by Prince Hans Adam II. By the way, this is just about exactly the same time that the closely associated Habsburgs, or that the UNPO was founded. And again, that's headed up by Karl von Habsburg, who the UNPO is also backing Islamists and pan-Turkish separatists in Xinjiang province. And in the separatist elements in Xinjiang, the pan-Turkist elements and the Islamist elements are functioning in concert with the elements associated with the Dalai Lama. And again, these seemingly disparate elements, pan-Turkist, Islamists, tantric Buddhists of Tibetan extraction, all under the auspices of the House of Habsburg, with the assignations that I've already looked at, a very similar distribution and alignment it can be found within the activities of the House of Liechtenstein as well, supporting Islamists, supporting fascism, or at least sympathetic to fascism, and also supporting the rights of native peoples. Now, even though there are some elements of U.S. intelligence, the petroleum-slash-underground-Reich-slash-drug-associated elements working with this, this is not something which is working in the U.S.'s benefit. Indeed, I suspect ultimately the UNPO and its promotion of native peoples may very well be used to break up the United States, because one of the groups they're heavily espousing are the Lakota Native Americans of the United States. Now, as was the case in our discussion of China and Tibet, or our discussions of the Soviet Union and their suppression of the Basmachis, this should not be misunderstood, and what I'm about to say should not be misunderstood as sanctioning the abuse of the Lakota. The Lakota have been thoroughly screwed. However, when one sees the House of Habsburg taking interest in the Lakota, one has to wonder. It may be that the interests on the part of underground Reich elements in the Lakota is simply to use them to establish sort of an offshore economic element inside of the United States. In the background of things like the Cabazon investigation that we did in the early 90s, the Jack Abramoff scandal, even in the background of the Carlyle Group, we've seen the rights of native people cynically used as a vehicle for advancing not only covert action, but corporatist elements, money laundering elements, and a variety of other unsavory things. It may be that the UNPO is simply interested in the Lakota in order to maybe take advantage of the Lakota as an offshore element at some point inside of the U.S. One wonders whether perhaps the very real, the profound social grievances of the badly abused Lakota might be used by the UNPO to help break up the United States in much the way that the former Soviet Union was broken up as well. Again, the royal houses, the crowned heads of Europe, view democracy as a blip. It's only existed in its modern phase for a couple of hundred years, and that's not a long time to them. They have a traditional association with fascism, as we have seen. And when you see the House of Liechtenstein closely associated with the Habsburgs, backing Islamists, backing pan-Turkists, backing tantric Buddhists, in the interest of self-determination, one has to wonder. The House of Liechtenstein, by the way, Hans Adam has been very active in backing the Aliens Are Among Us disinformation effort as well. One wonders whether perhaps they're looking to either establish the Lakota as a breakaway element within the United States, and that is part of an element to physically break up the United States, or whether they're simply looking at that as an offshore element as well. Again, this is not to say that the Lakota have not been thoroughly screwed. They have been. But if they're going to collaborate with the likes of Karl von Habsburg, they're going to be royally screwed. And the Native American activists, and there are a number of them who listen to this program, should take note of that. If you think the white folks in this country are bad, the Lakota are to a certain extent dealing with the white folks that the white folks over here were trying to escape. And if you think the ones over here are bad Native Americans, wait till you see what they were trying to get away from. This concludes, oh, by the way, do not fail to utilize the many websites available, Spitfire List, Triple W Spitfire List, the linked websites from WFMU, and the other websites containing a wealth of information. This show will be turned into a long article-length description very shortly. And again, on the Spitfire website, there's a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. If you don't like what you're seeing, there's no better way to fight back than to support the work I'm doing. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 550, Going Native, being recorded on April 30th of the year 2006. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.